Dolphins made it back to the postseason last year, and now this offseason is all about getting it back to that spot. Welcome to the X's and Omar offseason special alongside Sun Sentinel Dolphins columnist Omar Kelly. I'm CBS 12 sports director Matt Lincoln, a very active postseason, lots of moves to
New
break down.
Studio!
Hey, you know, things are looking different down the street with the new faces that the Dolphins have, and now it's looking a little different in here too.
The come up. Now it'll be interesting to see if this roster's coming up. I wrote a column in today's Sun Sentinel, and it's really after thoroughly analyzing everything that the Dolphins have done. Their 90 player roster is set. Once those undrafted rookies are signed, they're set. The draft picks are made. Free agency spending is just about done. They'll probably add one or two veterans a little bit later, probably the week before the draft. But this is your team. Mm-hmm. The question is it better than the playoff team that you had last year that was 10-6?
Well, the mantra this year is zero in. Explain what that means to this year's team.
They're referring to starting fresh. Everything that you did last year, it's gone. You've got zero in the books. And this is about beginning fresh and seeing if the gains that you're going to make now are going to make this team better. And it sort of piggybacks on my column. Ryan Tannehill should be better in his second year in Adam Gase's offense. Jay Ajayi should be, and the offensive line, hopefully, the unicorns. Hopefully the offensive line will be better and more cohesive. They know Jay Ajayi. They know what his strengths are. They know how to play him up. The receivers, receiving core, all three guys are back. You got Julius Thomas, who's been with Adam Gase since his Denver days. All of those things should be better, and they should be taking a step forward in the second year under Adam Gase. Now, this is also going to be another step forward with the same defense. Matt Burke has taken over for what was the defense coordinator? Not Todd Bowles. New head coach of the Denver Broncos, Vance Joseph. And he's going to turn up the volume with a little bit different sort of package. They haven't really tipped it off what it is, but I think it's Kevin Coyle's old speed package. Just a little bit of multiple confusion elements.
Well, I think we're all sort of expecting that, at least hoping that a lot of those players that have been around will continue to get better. But really what this special is about and what people are excited about this time of the year is the new guys.
Yeah.
So we are going to talk about some of the free agents that have gone in, the trades that the Dolphins have made, and whether or not that's made the team better. But it's the week after draft week, so it's time to break down some of these draft picks. And I'm sure you watched, as we all did. The Dolphins went with a pass rusher in the first round, going with Missouri's Charles Harris. Then Ohio State's Raekwon McMillan, a linebacker in the second round. Clemson defensive back Cordray Tankersley after that. And then added defensive tackles Devon Godshaw, Vincent Taylor in the later rounds. How will these newcomers help Matt Burke's unit?
It'll be interesting to see what they do with Raekwon McMillan. I think he's sort of the key element there, because I think if any of them has a chance to start, it's going to be McMillan. They need three linebackers, really only two play every down. You have to think Lawrence Timmons and Kiko Alonso, the leading tackler last year, the guy who, you know, the veteran that they added from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Those are your those are your three down linebackers. But Raekwon has a chance to sort of unseat Koemisi and beat out Neville Hewitt for that third spot. How they all fit in, I don't know, because every one of them is an inside linebacker. Well, we know Kiko's going to be moving to the weak side, but then Raekwon, where does he go? Lawrence Timmons, if you remember, he was a pass rusher at Florida State. His body type is sort of a strong side linebacker type. He's good at rushing the quarterback. I believe he's got nearly 30 sacks in his career. So we see where that can fit in. It'll be interesting to see how they all implement it. Now, Charles Harris. He's really going to be the pass rushing specialist paired with Cam Wake. You got two guys with athleticism, speed, great bend ability. Funny and interestingly enough, when I watched Charles Harris's film at Missouri, it reminded me of Cameron Wake. When I'm talking about the low bend, you know how Cam does it. He gets, you know, he twists his body, gets low to the ground, turns the corner at a sharp angle, gets to the quarterback. Well, now Charles Harris can do it from the opposite end. The question I had about him, though, was he was an outside linebacker, a pass rushing specialist at Missouri, and he really couldn't set the edge. Let's be real about it. And What we know is that the Dolphins struggle setting the edge.
Sure.
The Dolphins allowed 6,122 yards, franchise record last year. They were bad. They couldn't stop the run, 140 rushing yards per game. How are they going to stop the run? Are we going to bank on these two fifth and sixth round defensive tackles competing with Jordan Phillips to improve that unit?
I think at this point that is what the Dolphins are expecting. Let's take a look at some of your questions. Of course, the show is all about you still, and we receive these questions via Twitter. This one's from @SnowdogFins. Is Chris Greer's loyalty to the best players available jeopardizing the Dolphins?
I think it's improving the Dolphins. I can give you a ton of examples about best player available. Jarvis Landry. When the Dolphins drafted Jarvis Landry in 2014, they had four receivers. You want me to name them? Mike Wallace. They had Brian Hartline coming off two back-to-back 1,000-yard receiving years. Brandon Gibson. Rishard Matthews, who's giving you 900 yards and nine touchdowns with Tennessee Titans. They didn't need Jarvis Landry.
Right.
But if you look at where this team is 3 years later, who's your number one player?
Obviously Jarvis Landry.
So BPA, it's a good approach in terms of improving your team. What it does is it ensures that Chris Greer, in 5 years when he's searching for a new job or looking for a raise, and you're checking his track record, he's got hit, guys in the league 6 years. You know, he's got a solid track record of adding good talent to his team. What the one concern I do have is it doesn't necessarily address your needs. The Dolphins waited till the fifth round to draft a guard, so he's going to have to be competing against Ted Larson, Isaac Asada. And then defensive tackle, which we all know was the number one need on this team. You waited till the fifth and sixth round to do it. Now, did you get good talent? Who knows? But you waited till the fifth and sixth round to do it. So need is an important element. I am personally a need guy. I'm not a BPA guy. I'm a BPA marries need. I would have certainly, in the second round, If this is my double guess, second guess special, instead of drafting Raekwon McMillan to add and compete as your third inside linebacker, I would have drafted Dalvin Tomlinson, who was selected the very next pick. I'm sure that I will be comparing those two players for the rest of their careers.
All right, let's take our next question from Ricardo Torrens. Being a playoff team, why would the Dolphins not draft impact starters days 1 through 3? Why go for the depth instead? And I think this is the answer is BPA, right?
BPA is the way. BPA is Chris Greer's approach. He's very adamant about that. And I don't disagree with him from this standpoint. When we began this show last year, what was our number one complaint about the Dolphins?
Last year?
Yeah.
Stopping the run.
Well, it became stopping the run.
Well, they were not very good at stopping the run the year before that either.
That's true. But I think we complained about the lack of depth.
Okay, yeah, that's true too, yes.
We did complain about the lack of depth, and you saw
You're
it.
Right.
You saw it become an issue late in the year.
Mm-hmm.
You were out there playing with Bakari Rambo,
yeah.
and guys who realistic Spencer Paysinger,
right.
They didn't belong on the field, but they were out there playing 40 snaps. Right now, you've ensured yourself that you've got four linebackers, four, counting Cole Meacy. Hell, we could go five, because I think Neville Hewitt is a good player. I personally think he's a good player. Takes a little bit of while to learn it, but once he's got it, he's good. So you got five good linebackers who could be NFL starters. Now, with the Cordea Tankersley pick, that was the one pick that didn't make much sense to me, because you've got four guys in your secondary that have started at least six games for you.
Mm.
So now you add a third-round pick. You've got five cornerbacks. How many cornerbacks do you really need? You really need six. But
right.
You got five. Depth on the offensive line, I wish it was a little better, but it is what it is. You can make it through the season with what you have. Whereas last year, a lot of guys were thrown in there and they won with them, but it was a struggle.
And I think that's the argument for Ricardo here is that yes, the Dolphins were a playoff team.
Yes.
But how close are they to a Super Bowl team?
No, they are not.
They are not. They're not one player away.
They're not
a guard away.
You're right.
If they were a guard away, then yes, you take the best guard and you put him in there and you hope you win the Super Bowl. But the Dolphins are not there yet.
That is an excellent point. I've never looked at it that way.
All right. Next question is from Roderick, Dat Boy Rod, 22. Who do you see more as a strong side linebacker, Raekwon McMillan, Lawrence Timmons, or will McMillan be Timmons' backup? They can't have them all play inside linebacker.
You're correct. They all can't play inside linebacker. I think that Raekwon McMillan is going to begin training camp as the backup inside linebacker. And then in the sub package, he's probably going to be worked in a little bit as the third guy to backing up Kiko Alonso and Lawrence Timmons. But I think there's a realistic chance, depending on where Koumissi's health is, that Raekwon McMillan could be that Sam. It depends on how stout he is, how physical he is. I haven't seen him in person yet, so I don't know. Can he set the edge? Mm-hmm. Can he take on and knock down a fullback? Those are things that, you know, really the traits that you're looking for a Sam linebacker. It's Koumissi, basically. So a lot of people think it's not hard to beat out Koumissi, but there's a reason he's been a 7-year starter here.
And does it matter in the experience level whether or not that guy who's making the calls, that guy who's reading the defenses, mm-hmm. whether or not he's playing the mic or he's playing a strong, does it matter?
See, here's the thing. You can only give one guy the mic, which is why it's called mic.
Right.
Which, by the way. And I have to think that mic is going to be the guy who has to be on the field for all three downs. So it might still be Kiko Alonso. Because okay. If you remember, when I broke down Lawrence Timmons' film, he's not that great against the pass. So there's a possibility he might be a rusher or he might be coming off the field. You know, that was his area of weakness, which is why Pittsburgh said, we can pass. Mm. And why the Dolphins ended up with him for a 2-year, $12 million deal. So it might still be Kiko Alonso calling the plays or maybe Raekwon McMillan calling the plays. But then that means Raekwon would have to be a three-down player. So who sits the bench? Kiko Alonso, you just gave a $28 million contract to? Or Lawrence Timmons, who's a multi-year Pro Bowl player.
I mean, McMillan is a
good
multiple
problem to have.
Captain, also
yeah.
at Ohio State, very intelligent young man. Maybe one day down the line.
He was at Ohio State for a cup okay. of coffee. Let's not give him that much praise.
All right. Well, we've discussed plenty of the defense, and now it's time to talk a little bit of the offense. It seemed anyway that the way everything shook out for the Dolphins front office is that other than Timmons, they did a lot of their offseason moves on offense and free agency, and then decided to use the draft picks on defense. So now, offensively, what the Dolphins look like is they're bringing Kenny Stills back. They've brought in Julius Thomas. They actually have tight ends now with Julius Thomas and Anthony Fasano.
They had tight ends before. They just weren't very good.
They just weren't very good.
No.
And they couldn't stay on the field, really. And then they drafted a 7th-round receiver in Isaiah Ford out of Virginia Tech. So have the skill positions improved for the Dolphins?
You know what? It's really stretch for me to sit here and say that the skill positions, because of the players added, have improved. Julius Thomas hasn't been good for the last 2 years. Yeah, he scored 24 touchdowns with Adam Gase in Denver. Maybe Adam Gase is just the genius that can get the best out of Julius Thomas. That's why they're reunited now. But athletically, he might not be the same player that he was when he was 24, 25. Kenny Stills, definitely, should take another step forward in his second year in this offense. He was kind of the veteran leader of that receiving core. And I expect him to take another step forward. I expect everybody in the offense to take another step forward if Ryan Tannehill is healthy. Anthony Fasano, those who've been around here for a while, we know who Anthony Fasano is.
Sure.
He's not dynamic, killing you in the seam, but he's going to be a red zone weapon, and he's going to be one hell of a blocker, better blocker than Deion Sims, so that assists your run game. So I do see improvements from the offense in terms of continuity, familiarity. That's going to help them. Now, where I see the area of problems and concern is the offensive line. You know I'm a Brandon Albert fan. And last year I gave him the midseason MVP award. Brandon Albert played with one hand and played pretty damn well except for that Pittsburgh game. He is going to be tough to replace. Yes, you believe that Laremy Tunsil will be a perennial Pro Bowler, a great elite player, and I have those beliefs as well. But it'll probably take him a season to get comfortable and used to playing left tackle. Now, is he going to be, you know, hit the ground for running? Maybe. But that means you're at a wash at left tackle. Now, we're taking a step back at left guard. Let's be real about
sure.
it. You go from Laremy Tunsil, who you think is dynamic, to Ted Larson. No disrespect to Ted Larson and his family, but there's a reason why he's a career backup, career journeyman. He's got 50-plus starts, but there's a reason why people always want to replace him and improve on him. And then if he loses out to Asiata, I think I said his name right.
Yeah, you did that.
Yeah, I did that. If he loses out to Asiata, who I like, I really do like, he was the 4th best guard in this draft. He fell, according to my sources, because he's got some chronic knee issue with the Jay Ajayi mysterious knee issue that makes NFL teams say, oh, we can't pick him. I think he's going to be a very, he's very physical in the run. So I like that aspect about him. So, you know, either way you go, is he Laremy Tunsil? Probably not. Mm. So you're taking a step back. And that concerns me because you have to protect for Ryan Tannehill and you have to open up running lanes for Jay Ajayi.
And I think the three questions go, and we can get more into this as we get closer to the season, but to me, the three big questions that go into this offense and whether or not they become a good to very good offense to a very good to an elite offense is, can they figure out those offensive line problems? Can Jay Ajayi stay on the field? Mm-hmm. And does Devontae Parker become the guy that he could become?
That's true.
If the answers to all of those three questions mm-hmm. are yes or good and all that sort of things, then this is going to be maybe an elite offense.
No question about it. I another excellent point made by you.
Hey,
like, you're bringing it today.
Like,
I did not factor in Devontae Parker. If he could stay healthy, he's got more talent than all the other receivers. He's just got to put it together. So you could be looking at a pretty dynamic offense. I've always said and do believe that year two, the jump that a quarterback makes in the second year of the offense is going to be significant. Look at Matt Ryan in his second year in that offense where he went from just a guy or just a little bit above a guy to elite mm-hmm. in one season. And maybe Ryan Tannehill could do the same.
Well, I'm just going to say, you know, I'm going to drop a little bit of a spoiler alert through the script, but I think it's very telling that we're talking about this team, previewing this team, going into their offseason moves and talking about the next season, and there is not one question about Ryan Tannehill. I don't think, you know, we've
excellent
got
excellent point by
questions.
You.
We've got bigger questions than the quarterback for once.
Yes, that's
for
a good point.
Once.
There was not one Ryan Tannehill question in X's and O's.
All right, here's a question from Michael. Out of all of our draft picks, who do you think will have the biggest impact on this team? I think he means this year.
This team this year. Oh, obviously, if Harris can give you six sacks this in his rookie season, that's tremendous because you're just learning. You still got a pacifier in your mouth. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be the offensive guard from Utah, Isaac Asiata. Isaac Asiata, just a player that when you watch this film, fell in love with him. Mm-hmm. Just thought, he's nasty. I believe Chris Greer called him a prick yeah. in the post-draft press conference. And it's true. He wants to smush your face in the dirt. If he's got you on the ground, he's jumping on top of you. And I love the fat trench players.
Sure.
And I loved his style. I thought he was a very good player. I thought he was a little bit heavy, but the Dolphins plan to change up some things that they do on the offensive line. So it maybe he fits in.
Since we're talking about offensive linemen, Alex Zabo wants to know, what's the money looking like to re-sign Juwan James? Redskins signed Morgan Moses to an extension last weekend that pays him 5 years, $40 million base, and guaranteed him $20 million. Is that what James is going to have to get after this fifth year?
That's certainly the bar. Juwan James got his fifth-year option yesterday. This is important because not only does it guarantee that he's probably going to be back, fifth year is only guaranteed for injury. So if he gets injured next year, he's definitely going to be back for roughly $9 million. But it also sets a price point for Juwan James. Right now, if you want to lock him up to a 4 or 5 year deal, you're talking $9 million a year. Mm-hmm. We have now set a price point for Juwan James. So the Morgan Moses price point is $40 million, $20 million guaranteed. Now you know what it's going to take to lock up your right guard, right tackle.
Well,
players aren't cheap.
And now you also see, though, that they don't have any young guys in there that you could possibly say, let him walk. We've got someone who can take his spot. And for cheaper, there doesn't seem to be anyone waiting in the wings to take Juwan James' spot. All right, next question is from Ben. I noticed the Finns did not draft a safety. Mm. Will they look to add one using an undrafted free agent, or will they ride it out with what they have? I think that's the question, really what seems to be the hole right now. Do they have someone to play next to Rashad Jones?
Well, they signed Nate Allen. Look at your face. You're like,
but yeah, I mean, did we do the same thing with this Issa Abdul Kaddous?
We did. Okay. Issa Abdul Kaddous was a player trending up. Nate Allen is a player trending down. He's got a 1 year, $3 million deal. That's clearly an indication he's a stopgap player. But here's the thing that always makes me a little bit uncomfortable. Michael Thomas has been here and been a starter for 3 years now. He's filled in for when things fall apart. He's very important on special teams, which is why he's a captain. So they don't always want to overload him at safety. But Michael Thomas can get the job done.
Yeah.
It's not sexy. It doesn't warm your heart, but it's pretty good. You need a specific player to play with Rashad Jones. He's got to be intelligent. He's got to have range. He's got to be able to diagnose what Rashad is doing because Rashad does a lot of freelancing. So I'm fine with Nate Allen and Michael Thomas until T.J. McDonald comes off his eight-game suspension.
Right.
And then let me throw you another name. A.J. Hendy, a young rookie from Maryland last year who was on the practice squad all year. Coaches kept raving about him. Earned a spot on the 53-man roster. I think the young man has some talent. I would like to see what he has. And if things go awry, you always have options. Jarius Byrd is still out there. Darrell Revis lives right down here in South Florida and has called the Dolphins a couple times about seeing if he can play for them. Wants to probably be a safety in the NFL. You got options. If you don't like what you see in September, you got options.
Hmm. Rashad Jones with Darrell Revis, that's kind of interesting.
It is interesting. It's quite intriguing. I've been sitting on that, so that's an exclusive right there.
All right. Brian Garcia asks, how much do you think the Deion Jordan situation factored into Miami's thinking with the selection of Charles Harris over Reuben Foster?
Ooh, that's a good one. From two aspects, the Deion Jordan situation. One, Charles Harris was a 3-4 outside linebacker, just like Deion Jordan. Mm-hmm. It's a guess whether or not they can become a 4-3 defensive end. I like Charles Harris's rush ability a lot more than I liked Deion Jordan. Deion Jordan was really athletic when I watched him in draft, but he didn't have polished pass rushing moves. There wasn't an elite pass rushing trait to him. Charles Harris, if there's one thing he's got, is elite pass rushing traits. That's it, but hey, that's a pretty good trick to have.
Man, all he's got to do is get one sack a game, and he's the rookie of the year.
Absolutely.
That's the way it goes.
That's the way it goes, and he'll probably have 20 opportunities to get that one sack a year. Yeah. Excellent point by you. But then again, the Reuben Foster, the medical, the character, the drug, make you a little bit queasy, sure. To quote Joe Philbin. Makes you a little bit queasy.
Not a great history of Alabama defenders in the NFL.
Yeah, but linebackers is pretty good.
Okay, that's true.
I would have gone the other route.
Sure.
I would have gone with Foster, to be honest with you. And I would have addressed defensive end in the second round or maybe the third round with a player like Jordan Willis or the kid from Villanova or the kid from Ohio. I would have done that, but I can understand why the Dolphins did what they did. You look at who gets paid in the NFL. The players who get paid are the guys who get the sacks.
And I think the Dolphins do feel fortunate that McMillan fell to them at 54.
Yeah, 54. Yeah. I think he was going to be a second-round talent to begin with. Maybe he would have lasted till the third round, but they certainly couldn't have got him in another round. If you stick to BPA and you're 54 and player number 42 is sitting there for you, and I'm just throwing out hypothetical numbers, according to Chris Greer, you take it.
Fair enough. All right, that's a little bit of the wrap-up of what the Dolphins did in free agency and in the draft. So let's talk a little bit about what's next here over the next few months. We've seen the moves. What's left for the Dolphins this offseason?
Well, really, the only thing left is Damian Williams has to sign his extension. Sign his restricted tender.
Right.
$1.8 million. He's throwing a tantrum right now. He doesn't want to come to OTAs. He says, you don't want to give me a multi-year deal? Well, I'm mad at you.
Right.
I don't want to be here.
I'm going to go to New England.
New England didn't make him an offer. But if you're Damian Williams,
right.
If you're the Dolphins, why aren't you offering me a three-year, $6 million deal? Why aren't you giving me some financial security? Because we know that they're going to let you go in free agency next year, and they're going to invest in Kenyon Drake, and we're not stupid. Williams isn't stupid. People have to realize these 53 players are 53 franchises, and they're looking out for their best interest. Damian Williams suffers an ACL injury next year, has to hit the free agent market. What does his future look like in the NFL? He wants some financial security, and truthfully speaking, considering what he's contributed the last 3 years, he probably deserves some. But we know that's not how the NFL works. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the Dolphins believe that as Drake continues to get better, he can do what Damian Williams did
last year. That's correct. You think Damian Williams doesn't know this?
I think Damian Williams definitely knows that.
Okay, so he still wants to be compensated.
Sure.
Now, this is a business for both sides. Dolphins said, no deal for you. Damian Williams says, I need my deal. He says, I'm not coming to OTAs. This is how it plays out. And then we've got the Jarvis Landry contract situation.
It's playing out a little differently. He is coming.
He is showing up, allegedly. He's showing up. He's playing nice. I mean, obviously, he's got an offer on the table that he's comfortable with, wants to see it improve.
Sure.
We'll see how it plays out. I would be shocked if they play game one and Jarvis Landry does not have a $60 million deal. Shocked.
I mean, I understand how...
He's now probably the 115th highest paid receiver in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, it's going to be taken
care of. And it's an odd situation because, I mean, he doesn't have necessarily the talent to be paid like a top 6 to 7 best receiver in
top 10, definitely.
But borderline top 10. The thing is, when you look at that mm-hmm. top 10, how many of those receivers mean more to their team than Jarvis Landry does?
Very few, probably about.
Maybe none. Maybe none.
Dez Bryant.
Still a run first team. But I think you say there is Jarvis Landry's value that he has for the Dolphins is much more than he would have for other teams.
That is correct.
So there is an issue here of saying, okay, well, I'm valuable like a top 5 receiver. Well, yeah, you are, but you can't get that if you go anywhere else. So they've got to find some sort of middle ground.
True. I think a fair balance, and I've written this, is to pay him as if he's a top 10 receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Give him guaranteed money that escalates to the $27 million mark range, mm-hmm. and give him some financial security. I think the deal that they gave Rashad Jones, which was 5 years, $60 million, and roughly 28 of it guaranteed, is an identical deal that they should give Jarvis Landry.
Makes sense.
And if they have offered him that and he declined it, then I don't feel sorry for him. You can sit and play on your $1 million this year and your $14 million franchise tag and play for a total of $15 million for the next 2 years. You could take my 30 now or play on 15 for the next 2 years. I think that that's fair and more reasonable.
Mm-hmm. All right, next question comes from Justin. Which player do you expect to work on his craft and surprise us next year?
You know, it's interesting that you brought up a couple of those players because I believe in Michael Thomas. Mm-hmm. I believe he's a good nickel. I believe he's a good special teams player, and I believe he can be a good safety. Jordan Phillips. I hope something's got to light his fire. Maybe these two young defensive tackles pushing him, motivating him, trying to get him to actually light a fire under him. Maybe the thought of the fact that you could become a backup now, maybe that inspires him. Maybe the thought of, hey, if I play well, I can secure my family's future for the future generations, hopefully. And then Devontae Parker, you're special here. Tons of talent. You just watch flashes and you say, he can run deep like Kenny Stills. He can be physical like Jarvis Landry. He's smoother than both of them.
Yeah.
Question is, can he put it all together? Can he stay healthy? But I think...
Does he want it?
I don't like questioning guys' drive, determination, hunger.
Okay.
His issue's been medical. Does he and maturity? All of these young guys, sure. They don't know what it takes. I've dealt with Brandon Marshall off the field and watched him train, watched him work, watched how hard he takes care of his body. The elite athletes, it's a 60-hour a week job in the off season. Now the question is Devontae Parker putting in that 60-hour a week job? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I can't say.
All right, next question comes from FinFan3493. Which free agents would you bring in to round out the player acquisition portion of the offseason? You said Darrell Revis already. You like Revis?
I like the thought of Revis at safety.
Yeah.
I like the thought of Revis going down and working in the nickel. I like the thought of Revis on my team, especially since the Jets are already paying him $6 million. Your contract's offset anyway.
Sure.
So it makes sense to me. He's here. The question is he motivated and hungry and driven and determined? Because why would he play for the Dolphins when he can go play for the Patriots? Mm-hmm. And he can go play for the Patriots if he wants to. But Darrell Revis is making $6 million this year. Why does he need to work?
Right.
So it comes down to drive, determination, and hunger. I have been told by my sources that he has reached out to Mike Tannenbaum, who was his former GM, and said, "Hey, I'm here if you're interested."
Specifically for safety?
I don't know what position. Okay. I don't know what position. We'll see. Dan Williams is another. I think the Dolphins need another defense tackle. I would love for somebody to come in and make a certain individual feel like his job is not guaranteed and push himself harder to be the player that he has the potential to be. And Dan Williams, even hell, Paul Soliai can come in here and contribute right away. Sean Derek Marks from Jacksonville. These are all 30-year-old defensive tackles who just need a $2 million deal looking for work.
Right. Hmm. All right, next question comes from Salo. Can William Hayes play DT, opening the door for Charles Harris to compete for starting minutes?
Oh, absolutely. If you watch his Ram film, he played defensive end on first down, went inside to defensive tackle on third down. That sounds exactly like what the Dolphins need, and in fact, that's how they used Jason Jones last year. So I see William Hayes sort of being the replacement for Jason Jones. I liked his film. I think he's probably one of the top additions they made on defense. Charles Harris, I see him and Cam Wake as the third down pass rushing specialist. Put him on the field, go get the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. All right, next question from Mike. Do you think Leonte Carew will be more involved in the offense this year, or is he a non-factor behind the top three receivers?
I would hate to say a non-factor. I think he's the fourth receiver if one of them goes down, which we saw at a point last year. All three of them were injured at the same time. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is Leonte Carew couldn't really contribute. That makes you feel comfortable. Adam Gase has said he put too much on Leonte Carew's plate. He put everything. You got to learn all three spots, the entire offense. And with some young players, it's just too much. Right. You put too much on their plate. Adam Gase has said that he's going to just give Leonte one job, one role. You learn it, get good at it. And I bet you that role is probably going to be Devontae Parker's backup.
Mm-hmm. He's the one that's most likely to be injured.
Yeah. Oh, that's cold. That's cold.
Hey, all right. By track record there.
Yeah.
And final, we got one more for you, and that comes from Xavier. Since Damian Williams has not signed his tender, do you think Kenyon Drake will see more total snaps this year?
Adam Gase has said he's going to get Kenyon Drake more involved. Kenyon Drake is an extremely talented player. I would love to see him work as a primary returner, kickoff, and punts. No offense to whoever handles the punts at the present moment.
Do we know that he's handling the punts right now?
I don't know. All of those young players, if you look at what the 2015 draft class did, they all took a major step forward in year two. That's what good coaching does. I expect the 2016 draft class to take a major step forward. That includes Kenyon Drake. That includes Leonte Carew. That includes Jakeem Grant. That includes, who was the first round pick last year? I don't even know who the first one was.
Wait, from Xavien Howard?
Yeah, Xavien Howard. Yeah. That includes Xavien Howard. All of those young guys have to take a step forward. A.J. Handy's of the world, step forward and become better players. Kenyon Drake is one of them. Mm-hmm. I would love to see him get more involved as a return specialist and compete with Damian Williams. The problem with Damian is Damian's a hell of a pass blocker, so you're not going to give that up.
Okay, so if we're off season, it's just about done. Not making too many more.
Yeah, no. You're gonna have one or two more veterans.
Overlying thoughts. I mean, how did they? Did the Dolphins address what they needed to address?
They got better from a depth standpoint. That was area number one of concern for me. They did not necessarily get better at the defensive line, but they did get better at linebacker. So maybe that it helps them improve the run. And then the third thing is continuity. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a major jump of, there's a reason why you re-signed our own, taking care of our own, so that they can come back and hit the ground floor running. So ultimately, did the Dolphins improve? Yes. Does that mean it's going to result in an 11-win season? No.
All right. We'll be breaking down of the season, of course, even more as we get even closer. There's plenty more practices and workouts and OTAs and all sorts of things to happen.
Things that don't annoy me.
But
go ahead. Yeah.
But thank you so much for watching and sending us all your questions. Of course, even if we're not doing the show, you can interact with us on Twitter using the hashtag XOmar.